This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is a special edition iFanboy podcast, Captain Marvel. iFanboy Special Edition Captain Marvel. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Are you sure it's not Marvel's Warbird chapter part one?
Marvel's Captain Marvel. And joining us is Ryan Haupt.
Are you sure I'm not a Skrull?
We've never been sure of that.
What was the first thing I made fun of you for at a comic convention?
The shoes I was wearing, and those are the shoes I'm wearing right now.
It's him.
We are here to talk about Captain Marvel, the latest Marvel Studios film. There'll be spoilers if you haven't watched the film yet or only spoiled, obviously.
Wait, you have the same shoes?
Well, I think I bought a fresh pair.
Okay, that's fine. That makes more sense. Okay,
yeah. I just keep going back to that well.
You've spent time in the jungle. I wouldn't think they'd last that long.
They don't. They fall apart after a couple of years of heavy use. But, you know, I refresh them.
How mad do you think Connor is right now?
About the shoes?
Go on.
I would be impressed if he kept them and used them only for podcasting.
Podcasting boots. Dress for podcasting.
Oh, Ryan's wearing the boots. He's got to do a show. So we're here to talk about Captain Marvel, which is the latest film in the Marvel Studios universe and the first focusing on a female hero.
Really?
The second period piece, which is depressing enough. So here we go. Let's talk about it. So it was directed by the husband-wife team of Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck and written by many people. Starring Brie Larson as Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, co-starring Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury, Bill Mendelsohn as Talos, the Skrull, Jude Law as Yon Rogg, Annette Bening, a bunch of people, Clark Gregg returns, Gemma Chan, Jaimon Hunchu, and Lee Pace return from Guardians of the Galaxy. Lots of things going on here. And I want to mention before we start that I went into this movie totally blind.
Me too.
I hadn't seen a trailer. I hadn't seen a teaser. I hadn't seen a TV commercial. I saw a couple of flashes of imagery here and there. Obviously, you can't escape that in the modern world, but I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know who was in it beyond Brie Larson and Samuel Jackson and Clark Gregg. I had no idea that Jude Law was in it, Ben Mendelsohn and Annette Bening. I didn't know any of this stuff. So it was very interesting to see sort of it unfold completely fresh in front of me. And it led to some interesting surprises, some disappointments, not knowing what to expect. So it was an interesting way to go into it. We talked about this with the Star Wars films. Unfortunately, at this screening, I was exposed to my first Avengers Endgame trailer. I had been completely blind on that as well, but nothing you can do about that, I guess, at the movies.
I mean, that's just the way it goes.
Yeah. So what do we think of Captain Marvel?
I was in much the same position. I got there and I didn't know. I don't tend to know anything about this stuff. And I'd seen, I don't want to say I'd seen mixed reviews, but I had seen like, all the people from comics who saw it literally were all like, this is great, but that kind of doesn't mean anything. You know, like, I'd seen Jamie McKelvey was just thrilled. It's, yeah, he designed the costume. He's super close to the character. You know, it's not going to be a piece of garbage because he's saying, you know, but then I saw, you know, then the rest of the world seems like it's mixed reviews. And so I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I knew that it took place in the past. For some reason, I thought it took place in the 80s, but it was more like the early mid-90s.
95.
Yeah, 95. Year I graduated
high school. Calendar on there, yeah.
You know, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I don't think it was my favorite of all of them, but it wasn't like Doctor Strange or what I would say Thor 2. You know, there's been so many of these now, which I know you like, but...
No, there's definitely a strata of lower level ones. I would put Doctor Strange in that one for sure.
Yeah. And Doctor Strange was like even the bad ones aren't bad. No. It's a little boring.
Doctor Strange, you know, the first Ant-Man, Hulk, like there's like a lower level.
Well, then that's the thing. You're going to be all over the place. Like, you don't like Guardians of the Galaxy. I do. Right. I really liked Ant-Man.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd put it middle, but with some things that I thought were really good that we haven't seen. That's kind of how I would go.
I thought it was more middling than that, and not in like an offensive way, but sort of Marvel has a formula for how it introduces characters, and this stuck to a lot of those same beats, but in the 90s. And
wait a minute, this took place in the 90s.
Yeah, the dream of the 90s is alive in Captain Marvel. Yeah, and I wanted more than the movie ended up giving me, I think, is where I come down on it. So that's not to say that it was bad or poorly done, but I left a little bit wanting.
I think I can see that in a little the way that the first Captain America movie, where we say like the first two-thirds, again, this has been so long and we all probably have different, but I tend to think that the first two-thirds of that movie is great, and then the last third of it is just a lead up to what he's going to do in the Avengers movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that to be off-putting. I loved that movie. I did. But I was like, oh, there's more to be done here. And I think that Captain Marvel does have that feeling a little bit. Now I know that
the Avengers... interesting, because I didn't think that at all because of the period piece aspect of it. It's not like she's racing towards... And I know that Captain America is the same thing, but I feel like if you watch this movie in a vacuum, mm-hmm. and this is like the first movie Marvel ever made, I think you have a complete story here.
Yeah, you might be right.
I mean, we know that she's heading off and eventually... Fury's going to punch that beeper button and it's going to call her to help with Thanos. But if you don't know that, I think there's actually a complete arc here. I like this. I didn't think it was perfect, but and there are definitely quibbles and problems I had, but I really found myself enjoying the sort of bizarre offbeat tone, which at first I thought was off-putting.
Not Thor Ragnarok offbeat tone.
No, this was more like she was doing Brie Larson's choices were very... She's not your typical heroine. She's kind of odd, and I liked that. Yeah. At first, I was off put by it for the first 10 minutes, and then I really was like, no, I actually like what she's doing here. And also, Bill Mendelsohn's Talos was the same way. It was sort of like everyone was a little kind of wacky.
Which, Skrulls are supposed to be wacky, so that I was excited to see and happy about. But I felt the same thing you felt with Bree's performance right at the very beginning. And then I also just, in thinking about the actual structure of the movie... It hews very closely to the first Thor movie. Like you have a hero type character who's not fully formed yet in a far off, wacky, fantastical world. They end up flung to Earth. They get a plucky Earth sidekick. They realize the true source of their power. They defeat the bad guy. They go back to space.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's their very successful formula. They just plug them into. But I thought there was enough interesting bits here that made it really fun to watch. I had a really good time watching this. I thought she was really fun. I thought Samuel Jackson was a fun, like they were a fun team. Like,
yeah. She was an interesting choice because I know she won an Oscar, right?
Yeah.
For the Room. Room. I didn't really like Room. Mm-hmm. I was like, I watched it and I was like, it's fine, but like it didn't really do a lot for me. And so she's a little bit of a blank slate for me. I know she was like Scott Pilgrim, but I don't think mm-hmm. I feel like I've seen a lot else with her in it. So I didn't really know what to expect to her, but I think that it made her a really good fit for this role
mm-hmm.
because Captain Marvel's an interesting, she's a little different character. She's not quite like all the other Marvel heroes. And she's been through a lot of my first real, you know, time with her would have been when Kurt Busiek was writing Avengers in the, you know, the early 2000s, late 90s. And she was Warbird. Like that's when I first got to know her. And I think that character's pretty much who she is now. She's been through a couple of different things through there. And I like her, and she's sort of got all this power. And so then the other side of that is there is a subtle but apparent feminist message that I was kind of looking to see how they would do it, which is very similar to how it was done in Wonder Woman. In fact, it may have even been more subtle, is the fact that other than in her little flashbacks where people are like, you can't do this, which wasn't necessarily ascribed to the fact that she's a woman. It was hinted at a couple of times. The pilot thing definitely was. That was about all of the recognition of her gender.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, she was just who she was. She was, you know, that soldier, and then she became very, very powerful. And it was just about being a hero. And I thought that that was kind of cool. I thought that worked really well. And because she was, I don't know, like she's kind of a blank slate for me. I thought she could build a character based on her. That I think that worked out really well in a way that was felt unique from the other Marvel characters. Her jokes weren't the same kinds of jokes, you know, that,
yeah.
that type of.
It's not a Tony Stark humor. It's a weird. It's like if you met her in person, you'd be like, she's weird, but
yeah,
I like her.
People are like that. Yeah.
And that was a fun, interesting choice as a lead. Like, you know, Wonder Woman's very serious, but so they put funny people around her. It's the high bar women have to face unfairly that they, you know, is she going to be sexy or charming or funny? But she has this weird energy around her, which I really found appealing. And from a character standpoint, I found myself thinking again, as I do with a lot of these solo films, what is she going to be like in the group dynamic? Because there's no one else, none of the other characters are like her. She's not goofy like Ant-Man. She's not goofy like Iron Man. She's funny in a different way. And partially because she maybe spent 6 years living amongst the Kree, but she's
unusual. The thing that makes that interesting about her is that she's like one of those powerful ones.
Yeah, and gives no bullshit.
Yeah. It's funny because at first I was like, so she can't fly? They take that away from her? And I really like the slow rollout
of her power,
of her developing into her, you know, powerful self. I thought that was very satisfying.
It's funny, on the walking out of the theater. Sorry, I'll get to you, Ryan. Walking out of the theater, the first thing I heard was, I have no idea what her powers are.
That was an issue. They also never actually named her Captain Marvel throughout the course of the movie.
That's not unusual, though. That's happened with other characters, and I can't think of who exactly at the moment, but that's not
And he really was an Incredible Hulk.
Right.
And the powers thing is a little frustrating, and I think following from that frustration of not being quite sure what the powers were, because I never knew what her power levels were from moment to moment, I was never actually convinced that she was in any danger. And I know that this is also a problem that all prequels suffer, that like they're not going to, Nick Fury's not going to die, but they're going to hint and tease about his eye all movie, which I rolled both of my functioning eyes at.
Well, I mean,
after that Han Solo thing,
I thought they were going to do that because they do it really early on. He gets punched in the eye, but they only did it at the end. Like, it wasn't like it was like, kept coming up. It never came up again really till the cat scratched him in the eye and he lost the eye, which is the least macho way to lose the eye.
Yeah, and then speaking of like the cat that finally did in Nick Fury's eye, my theater, I don't know how your guys' theater were reacting during the movie. The theater I was in loved that stupid CGI cat.
Oh yeah, the cats are terrible. Yeah. Everyone the cats are on the internet. People love cats. I don't particularly care about or like cats, but people do, and it was cute.
The man with allergies.
Yeah, the man with really bad allergies, but it was cute. It was funny. It was in zero G, and the joke about
the CGI
how
CGI didn't look very good a lot of the time.
There was a bit of that.
I mean,
I thought the CGI in general actually didn't look great in this movie.
Well, you have the very obvious de-aging CGI, which works for a scene or two, but it's harder through the course of a film. I thought it worked better with Sam Jackson than it did with Clark Gregg.
Yes,
Clark looked a little plasticky, but then at least they kind of riffed on that by making it a Skrull in disguise. Spoiler.
Only partially.
I know, but for me, I was like, okay, like I can forgive him looking a little funky if he also wasn't really himself anyways. But yeah, it did look better for Nick Fury than...
Well, the only problem with Nick was that he's, you know, Sam Jackson 70, so he moves like a 70-year-old who's also...
I saw that, like during the fight, I was like, oh.
Or even whenever he had to run, he was just like...
Yeah, running in the like records room.
Yeah.
He didn't stop Spike Lee from jumping up and trying to kill him at the Oscars.
Right.
You know, the real problem with Sam Jackson in this was 1995... Should have had the Jules wig. That's what he should have looked like in this.
You're right. They really blew an opportunity here.
I'm the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who's a bad motherfucker.
They were funny together. You know, Nick Fury isn't quite Nick Fury at this point.
I liked that.
Him trying to figure her out, her trying to figure him out, and then sort of realizing they're good partners was really fun. I like their relationship a lot.
It's also the first time that Sam Jackson's actually had like a story role. in one of these movies. He's been in all of
Avengers,
them.
He was...
Captain
America was probably the biggest one, Winter Soldier, when he had the...
But you didn't get a lot of sort of his character in any of that stuff. Like, this one, he talked about, you know, himself a little. Like, it humanized him. And it's interesting because he wouldn't do that now, you know, the super agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. guy. Mm-hmm. But this version of him might a little bit. So he was a little more human, which I think is going to help, you know, when Captain Marvel comes back, like, they will have a relationship that maybe is a little warmer than his relationship with everybody else, where
sure.
He's much more cold. And
they don't trust him. You know, the other Avengers.
Yeah.
They know he's got a plan, but they don't. Yeah, exactly.
And I think. That's such a good dynamic.
This movie made me sad for the loss of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a agency in the movies. I mean, I know that they've taken them out of the movies for various stupid reasons, and it's fun to have them. It's fun to have, you know, Agent Coulson in the mix, and it's fun to have this shadowy organization in the background, and it's fun to have Nick Fury around.
This movie led me to this conclusion that I'm still working on. I'm still researching it, but I'm just going to try this out here. Phil Coulson is the Wedge Antilles of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. just roll that around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Come back to me. Let the internet work with it. I'm still working on it myself. I'm not fully convinced, but I had the thought and I haven't knocked it down yet.
So, you know, we open up in media res, you know, Carol is living with the Kree and Hala and
Hala.
Doesn't know she's going by the name Veers. She doesn't know they don't know who she is, or that's the name she goes by.
Was that a Star Wars reference, by the way?
I mean, they pronounce it. You'd think they'd just call her Veers, but Veers seemed like a Star Wars reference. And she's part of sort of an elite Kree hit squad led by Yon Rogg, played by Jude Long. That includes Korath, who's Jaiman Honshu, and Minerva, who's Jimma Chan, who I was expecting to be more of a factor because Minerva is a big character in the books, and Jimma Chan just came off of Crazy Rich Asians, but she was hardly in it at all. And then she gets killed, which is a surprise.
I liked her, though.
She was great. I just thought she'd be, like, elevated.
There wasn't much to it.
Not knowing anything about the story, as I'm unfolding, I think, okay, Jude Law's going to die early, and then Minerva's going to take over as the badass because they're promoting her in the posters, but that never happened. She sort of stayed in the background. And so then, you know, slowly Captain Marvel or Carol finds out something is wrong here. She ends up stranded on Earth. And that's when she starts to slowly find out that she is an Earthling who was captured by the Kree after she was imbued with the power of whatever that thing was.
The lightspeed drive or whatever.
By the original, not Captain Marvel in this case, but the original Mar-Vell, which was a nice twist, I thought, played by Annette Bening, because that's a gender switch from the comics. So that I didn't see that coming because of that.
And I was like, is that Annette Bening? And I thought, well, she really let herself age because
yeah,
she's not
great.
That old. Yeah, no, she does, but she looks like a woman who's her age, and I was like, oh, that's good. I like that.
It's always better.
It's funny because it upsets me though, because I remember when she like became a thing and she was like the hot actress,
mm-hmm.
you know, like before she married War, and I was like, oh, I'm old. It's just bad.
And then we flash back. We start to learn about Carol's life, and we see her best friend Maria Rambeau, and then we meet her like 10-year-old daughter Monica Rambeau, as we know is the next Captain Marvel.
Yeah. At first, I was like, why did they change? That's awesome. She's Photon. But why did they change her? Oh. Cool.
So, you know, if you take the time jump, that would put Monica, you know, in her 30s in the modern time. So that she could be involved in the story if they chose to go that way, which would be awesome. Because her character, the little girl was cute. That was a fun, you know, sort of aunt-niece kind of relationship. I mean, it was solid. And I don't mean solid to sound bad. It was really, I had a really good time watching it. I enjoyed it more as it went along.
Yeah, that was definitely the case.
And unfortunately, for at least Josh and I, one of our favorite actors, Lee Pace, continues to be really terrible as Ronan.
I'm okay with that in this, though, because it's the one role where he's like, I'm just going to pulp the shit out of this and let it be. Like, it's kind of what it's supposed to be. It doesn't bother me.
And it's like, and now, Connor, he was bad in The Hobbit, too.
I fell asleep in The Second Hobbit, never saw the third one.
I've seen them all.
I meant The Hobbit as well, not The Hobbit number two.
I'm just saying, I get what you're saying. I'm saying I don't remember anything about those movies.
I've seen them several times. He is terrible in all of them.
I have a question for you,
not
too.
Not his fault.
Yes.
So, you know, you attained adulthood in the 90s, from what I understand.
Whoa!
A form of it.
How did this movie work as a 90s period piece to either?
I thought that was the worst part of the movie, was that
I thought, okay,
they really hit you over the head that it was the 90s every 5 minutes.
And this is like, I I mean, other than them saying it, though, and the soundtrack.
Well, they just, here's a beeper. And, you know, like,
yeah,
nascent internet. And
I thought some of it was funny.
It was funny individually, but I just thought every 5 minutes. It wasn't like in the 40s for Captain America every 5 minutes. They were like, here's Glenn Miller.
Yeah.
You know, it's just.
But like the bit where the disc took a long time to load.
I like that bit.
My theater was laughing a lot at that. I did not. Yeah. I thought that wasn't super hilarious, but whatever.
I remember that, though. I think that the problem is that some of the choices were obvious and not subtle. I think you're probably right that I didn't really notice it as it bothered me. But when she put on her 90s grunge outfit, I was like, that's a little, that Nine Inch Nails shirt's a little on the nose. And it's worn out, which is weird, which I guess would have been a thing that you probably could have bought in L.A. at the time.
Right.
I actually thought, I think the idea behind the all-female 90s alternative soundtrack is kind of a good one. Mm-hmm. But I kind of also felt like, those songs are all obvious choices.
They had Nirvana, too.
I know, but that was all, and he wrote the whole song. I mean, not officially, but come on. But other than that, you know, some of that stuff was a little too on the nose with me. I'm just a girl. It's like, all right, you can do better than this. But also, it's a popular movie, and most people are actually we lived that stuff, so we heard it all the time. So maybe not that bad. But
I lived it, man.
Well, it's true, which is horrifying. Can I talk about the thing that I really liked the most about the movie, though?
Sure.
So because I didn't know anything that was going on, we start out, and I don't know Captain Marvel's story all that well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever read her origin in the comic book. I know that, you know, some of the basic things about it and the gist, but not really the details of it. I know that she has a problem with the Kree. But being, as we have through all the comics, the Skrulls are the bad guys.
Right.
And the twist that in this, this is the spoiler, and the Skrulls are not the bad guys.
Right.
I thought was really good and really unexpected. I really liked the Skrulls. I loved seeing them on screen. I liked the paranoia around them. And then I liked the twist that they're not necessarily the bad guys.
I was in mixed feelings on that because I didn't like the twist. It was unexpected. I did not see it coming. It was reminiscent of the Iron Man 3 twist that we all loved and everyone else hated about the Mandarin.
Right, right.
However, I think the Skrulls are terrific villains. So I think more nuance in them would have been interesting. Like some of them are like just this refugee group is not evil, but there are evil Skrulls.
And that's the way I took it, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Because there's still an option for evil Skrulls in the war that's going on. And there's it's all about perspective and point of view. I the thing is, like, you have Ben Mendelsohn is a bad guy and creep and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he shows up, you go, well, then he's the bad guy. Right. So by making him not that, it subverts expectations.
And once that reveal happened, he got weird and wacky too, and I loved every bit of that.
Yeah, and I think that fit.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of, like, in the beginning when he was pretending to be the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. guy and the order was, you know, kill or, you know, cap, you know, whichever, you know, shoot on sight. I thought, well, why is he so violent there and why is he coming around? Why didn't he just do this in the beginning?
Right.
This is the only part of that that didn't quite sit with me. It let us have that scene, but maybe if that had never happened, then would the plot have changed? And the answer is no.
No. She felt compelled to really help him because of that. She heard that, but that was really...
Right.
Yeah, it didn't really make a ton of sense that he would do that.
Right.
I mean, I guess it's just desperation to not get found out at that point.
Yeah, but either way, like, there is something valuable about the idea that that we automatically think the green ugly guys are the bad guys and they're not.
For sure.
And I think that that's going to upset some of the people who are upset about some of the diversity issues that we see in things. But also all the Kree people are 100,000 different colors too, so... I really want to see the big brain Supreme Intelligence.
Yeah, I was really hoping we'd get that. Bummer.
I think they did a really good job of making the Kree also seem pretty alien, even though they're humanoid. I thought that was really good.
Well, they had blue skin or they had really intense eyes, and so that worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy those cosmic stories. I'm not the biggest cosmic expert, but as much as I didn't really like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, I think that it brings an interesting dynamic to the world, and I think this was a fun... You know, a really different kind of Marvel story. It took place a lot of it in space, and for that reason, you get a different dynamic. I liked that bit. I liked the whole third act when they, you know, stole the ship and went into space and had a big battle and spaceship battle. And
I also really liked her power set is impressive. mm-hmm. in a way that they've sort of, I was going to say, neutered some of the other characters. Like, Thor is supposed to be the most powerful, but he's kind of not.
Right.
He's really strong. I think
they've said that Captain Marvel is the most powerful person in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I like that. And yeah. I like that, too. They demonstrated it. And I think that when she mixes with the other people and she has to go against Thanos, I think there's weight to that. And I think that it was presented well. I think that's going to be good.
Let's talk about the first mid-credit sequence in which... I just want to, because it's related to her as an Avenger. You know, we see the Avengers, the surviving ones, basically the original Avengers, plus Rhodey looking at, you know, the death toll and trying to figure out who's left, and then the Captain Marvel beeper that was activated at the end of the last Avengers film loses power and stops beeping, and they're trying to figure out how to turn it back on because they don't know what it means, but they know at least Fury was trying to call someone, so they should figure it out. And then I thought it was a great little whip pan over to her standing behind them.
It was like a shot out of a horror movie.
I thought it was great. And she had this weird blank expression, like, where's Fury? After that, I was pumped for the next Marvel movie. I was like...
And her costume was slightly different, too.
I didn't notice at that
point. Well, it's been a while.
Exactly. But yeah, it was the same color scheme, but there was some of the detailing, like, I noticed around the shoulders was different than when she had left Earth originally.
But it made me really pumped for Endgame. And that's cool. She's a good addition to the team.
Yeah.
And she'll be a fish out of water. She hasn't been on Earth since the 90s.
Yeah, there's a lot of good that can come of that sort of change. Like, I know that, you know, everybody's going to start aging out of these roles, you know?
Well, I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of change after Endgame.
Yeah, but that's fine. Like, how many movies are there?
21. 100? Captain Marvel is 21.
And this is the first one that's a female lead?
Yeah.
Ant-Man and the Wasp is the first one that had a female character in the title.
Yeah, but that's crazy, by the way.
Yeah.
And it's still one of those things, like, part of me can't help but feel... It was the same thing when I saw The Force Awakens. I was like, little girls are going to have, like, a rad action hero.
Yeah.
And it's still so rare that I'm really impressed by that. Like, I think that's such a cool thing for, you know, kids to have.
And not just her, but also Maria Rambeau's badass pilot in this, and she's cool, and they have a fun friendship.
That was actually one thing I thought was lacking. I wanted a little bit more of the Top Gun, these two women as pilots bucking the system. I wanted one...
Well, they didn't really buck the system, though. They were relegated to sort of non-combat stuff.
Yeah, I know. But I wanted one at least terrestrial airplane-based dogfight, and I didn't get that. And I was a little disappointed.
You know what? You know what's cool? Like, sort of based on that, I was at Disney World last week, and I saw a lot of kids in Captain Marvel stuff. Not just girls, boys and girls.
Awesome.
In Captain Marvel shirts and sweatshirts and, like, gear. And I was like, that's rad. That's a whole new thing I've never seen before, and that's really cool. And it's like... You know, she's kind of a Superman character.
I was just going to say that. She's you know, she's got the bright colors, thanks to Jamie McKelvey's redesign, and she has the Superman power set. So she's sort of, as much as Captain America is the spiritual Superman, and Thor might be, you know, closer to Wonder Woman, she's sort of the Superman character.
Yeah.
That it comes with the same challenges, but you deal with that as writers. I mean, it's a challenge that Ryan talked about earlier, where there was never really any sense that she was in danger. But you deal with that in different ways. You give them different problems to deal with. I like the end when, you know, it's just her and Jude Law, and you think they're going to have a callback to their original fist fight, and she just blows them away like Indiana Jones.
I did think, that was a thing. He's like, turn it all off, and she's like, she's not stupid. Why would I do that? I thought that was a really good choice.
I had a really good time, as much as I really had to pee during the movie and was
near the end,
distracting. Again, the casting continues to be strong for these movies. I came around on her, but everybody else, you know, they're all big-time good actors, and it really helps these films a lot. It'll be interesting to see what they do next to her, because obviously that'll be informed by... They could either continue her story in the present day after Avengers, or they can go back, because she's got, you know, however many 25 years of... or 20 years of, you know, space battles they can go back to. Kree-Skull War stuff.
It was also nice to see a Marvel movie that wasn't just Georgia supposed to be California, supposed to be Wakanda, supposed to be Virginia. Like, give me a movie that actually is filmed in some places other than Georgia. Thanks, Marvel. And this one was. I think the California desert stuff was actually filmed in Australia, but it looked very convincingly, you know, deserty. Yeah. It didn't look
there
like they were on a...
There was definitely some LA there, and they were actually in Louisiana.
Yep, they were actually in Louisiana, too, and that I appreciated... the diversity of settings, and the settings didn't just look green screened in when I thought that, you know, I, as I said earlier, I thought some of the special effects in this movie weren't quite up to snuff. I wanted to make a joke about, like, well, they use the special effects in the 90s too. They're not that bad. It's just I was a little surprised based on, I did watch the trailers. I remember thinking in the trailers, like, oh, I hope those aren't the final effects. I hope they're still polishing and rendering some better versions of those. And maybe they were a little better, but I wasn't completely blown away by those.
I'm really glad that there was, other than Coulson and Fury, there wasn't, like, you running into teenage, you know, Tony Stark. And obviously he wouldn't be a teenager, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm just happy there wasn't, like, a situation where they...
I did want to see, like, a dossier. When he was going through his dossiers at the end, and I did see somebody comment in a review about how, like, finally we know the origin of the paperwork that began the Avengers Initiative. And I'm like, all right, that's a, you know, the scene doesn't fall that flat as the reviewer made it sound, but it is kind of a fair point that it was, like, a build up to a piece of paper. And when he's got his, like, little dossier and he's flipping through it and he sees some stuff about Carol, I did really want there to be, like, a never-recovered Captain America's body file and, like, how's that arc reactor going at Stark Industries file. And
right. He's keeping track of everything.
You could have done some
more. That would be, like, his next month, because he only gets the idea to start doing that from Carol. So then he has to start this. So actually, my question that I had during the movie, which I'm hoping you guys have a better memory than I do, what is the arc of the Tesseract?
I was thinking about that a lot.
Okay, it was so lost in the Arctic with Cap. So
it's recovered from a Norse church in the first Thor. Captain America movie.
Captain America.
By the Red Skull. And then it sucks the Red Skull through a portal to that planet in Infinity War. And then it gets left on Earth from there.
So at the beginning of Avengers 1...
Yeah, where is it?
Had it.
It's in a S.H.I.E.L.D. facility. Loki steals it.
They've had it since, I guess.
At the end of the first Avengers, Thor takes it to Asgard.
No, but this is before that. So
yes.
So it goes down in the water with Cap. It's recovered by... This is where it gets confusing, because it goes down in the water with Cap, and they find him when they find the Tesseract.
And then that goes to Annette Bening.
But...
No, it couldn't have gone down in the water with Cap. Otherwise, Project Pegasus wouldn't have had it.
That's the confusing thing. Didn't they find it at the beginning of Captain America along with his body?
It must have stayed at the base where Tommy Lee Jones and Peggy were at the end of Captain America. Because we went down in the ice, because Cap's still frozen in Captain Marvel. And Annette Bening, Marvel, needed access to the cube. So it must have been in government custody from the end of World War II up to the 90s, where it's exposed on the Kree ship.
I thought for sure they found him and the Tesseract together.
Oh. You're right. It powered the ship.
So they found the Tesseract, but they were unable to find Steve in the
40s. Yeah, because I think the Tesseract stayed at the base, and then Steve took off.
No, it went down with the ship. Stark found the Tesseract on the ocean floor. I remember I have a memory of them plucking it off the floor.
Okay.
So Howard Stark found the Tesseract.
Just given it to government, because then Project Pegasus was a government project.
Right.
And that's how Mar-El got it.
In my head, the memory of them finding the Tesseract was when they found Steve, and it was before they found Steve in the 40s. So that's what it was. Okay.
So then she had it, then the cat has it, the cat pukes it up, so then S.H.I.E.L.D. has it. So when we get to the first Avengers movie,
that's where it is.
Nick Fury's in charge of it.
And then at the end of the first Avengers, it goes to Asgard, and then in the third Thor movie, Loki steals it from the Asgardian vault, and then Loki gives it to Thanos. Thanos turns it into an Infinity Stone, because that was what Julie asked me. She's like, where is that now? And I'm like, it's on the gauntlet. It's one of the stones.
Right.
Right.
Space stone, I believe.
It's had quite a life.
Isn't it energy?
Quite a MacGuffin.
It's not space. Space one is the purple one, isn't it?
Purple one's power.
Oh, Christ, that doesn't
mean
anything.
Red one's reality.
Yeah, you know better than me already, I can tell, so don't worry about it. The Tesseract one is, like, blasts things.
No, the Tesseract is what lets him, like, teleport around through space.
I know, but it let the Red Skull make all the energy weapons. It makes Captain Marvel shoot out...
It's power.
Basically, plasma and energy.
I'm pretty sure the purple one's the power one, but we don't have... I mean, I feel like it's a power source, and... In the same way that, like, I could strip out the wiring that powers an electric door, a portal through space, and use it to zap people. That's not the correct use of it, but I could do that.
People are screaming right now. So,
hold on. Let's.
All right. So, the Tesseract is. Oh my God. Why can't I find this? Blue. Original color, Margo.
Space stone.
Space. It's a space stone?
Got it. Got it in one.
I had no doubt when you said it. I was like, he's definitely right. The reality stone is red.
It doesn't make any ether. Sense.
The soul stone is orange. The mind stone is yellow. The time stone is green. Yep. Red is reality.
Yeah.
I'm not looking at anything. This is just in my brain cells.
I am looking.
It's just strange that the Tesseract, the blue one, the Cosmic Cube, as we used to call it when it had a cooler name, is the space stone because it's always blasting people.
In comics, it's different. The blue one is the time gem in the comics.
And in the comics, the Cosmic Cube has the ability to remake reality, so it should be the Reality Stone, but the Reality Stone is the red stone, which is the weird MacGuffin from Thor 2 that I don't even remember. The Aether, I believe it was called.
None of this makes any sense.
And it's the one that Benicio Del Toro had. And then
it was the one Benicio Del Toro had, the Power Stone in Guardians of the Galaxy. Uh-huh. And then the Asgardians at the end of Thor 2 gave him the Reality Stone.
And then Thanos took that from him.
Which was then stolen, from Thanos.
Right.
This is very confusing.
We're here to help you, Connor.
I'm just saying.
Do we have this movie covered?
Look. At the time,
is there anything else?
Look at the time.
Any other thoughts? I mean, it's fun. She's fun. I'm looking forward to more Captain Marvel. I had a good time. I think it's a complete story, but your mileage may vary.
I walked out happy, and I thought, oh, kids are gonna like watching this. I'm gonna, it's a good time. I really liked seeing. It was she had a different kind of power set that the other sort of her powers were not confusing to me, by the way. She blasts out energy. She can use it to shoot things, or she can use it to fly.
But she
seems to be it. Herself.
Well, in the beginning, she uses she uses the blast to fly, but by the end, she's just flying.
Right, but she's basically
she just
projecting
out how
energy.
To project it down at her feet,
right,
instead of her hands.
Well, kind of. She kind of has an aura around her because at the end, she doesn't need the mask to be in space. She kind of has
that's the energy.
Right, but she's not blasting it. It's just sort of she's sort of like a Green Lantern now. It's sort of it does it all.
Or Cannonball from the X-Men.
Either way, I liked that she wasn't like I liked her power set. I liked that she's going to be more powerful than everybody else. I like how that's going to fit in. I thought she was an interesting character. It was fun to watch. The costume looked really good.
And I liked the little costume in jokes when she was figuring out what color to make it. And so there was a lot of different crease suits, and there was one that was sort of looked like DC's Captain Marvel suit.
And there was one that looked like her Ms. Marvel costume.
Yeah.
In the coloring, it you know, kept her covered, but.
All right, so there you go. There's Captain Marvel, the latest. So should we rank all 21 films?
No.
Yep.
That's the latest from Marvel Studios. If you want to talk about it, you can go to fanboy.com. There'll be a post for the show, and you can tell us what you thought. And then we'll be back. In about a month, there's three films coming out. We've got Shazam the first week of April, Hellboy the week after that, and then 2 weeks after that is Avengers Endgame, which is the next part of the Marvel story. And we'll be back talking about that in some form or another. And until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Ryan Old Bones Haupt. That's my call sign, guys.
Ooh, Old Bones. Get in. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in.
You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.